spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Gift, was written by Joseph Mendel and is third in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding Eternal Light programs.
Yes?
I'm Rezin Shepherd.
I'm happy to know you, Mr. Shepherd. Won't you come in?
Well, thank you. Not tonight, sir. I only came to, Well, sir, where I come from, that's Virginia, there's a saying. Give a man a week to settle in his new house and another week to get curious about his neighbors, then go and give him welcome. So, welcome to New Orleans.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. You're very neighborly.
It's true what they say, that you're, from New England.
They?
Well, people talk about a newcomer. You are a New Englander? Well, of course, anyone could tell who heard you speak.
Is it so noticeable?
But I would never have thought that,
What else do they say about me?
Well, you don't look like a Jew.
I see. Is there a special way a Jew should look?
I don't know, sir. That is, I've never seen one. And you're the first in New Orleans.
Perhaps he should wear a long cloak and a flowing beard and walk like Moses.
Oh, believe me, sir, I meant no offense.
I take no offense, Mr. Shepherd. You did come to welcome me. But there is something I would like you to understand.
Now, please, there's no need.
I was born in Newport, Rhode Island, on the eve of the Battle of Bunker Hill. And my earliest recollections are of the synagogue where my father was the rabbi.
You owe me no explanation, sir.
I've never thought very much about it. Mr. Shepherd, you see me as I am. And there is nothing remarkable about me, either as an American or as a Jew. Nothing remarkable at all.
That is what he said to me in the year 1802. A year before Mr. Jefferson purchased Louisiana Territory from Napoleon. But he was wrong, for in your own day, 100 years after his death, he is remembered in synagogue from the Atlantic to the Mississippi. His name is inscribed on hospitals, in the streets and parks and libraries of more than one city. His name was Judah Turo. Yet there was some truth in his words. You will understand that I can say this since Judah Turo was my friend. He was not a poet or a statesman or a leader of armies or a scientist. He had no genius. There was nothing of brilliance in his life. He was simply an enterprising, industrious, energetic merchant and shipowner who managed to build a sizable fortune, which he spent as he pleased. And this disturbed a certain Mr. John McDonough.
You're a rich man, Miss Turo. Perhaps richest in New Orleans, after me, of course.
If you say so, Mr. McDonough. For myself, I have no desire to count another man's money.
The possession of wealth brings responsibility.
I'm happy to hear you say that, sir.
Are you? Then I haven't made myself clear. Mr. Turo, yesterday, the ladies of the orphans' home came to see me.
They visited me the day before.
Exactly. They told me the amount of your contribution.
I expressly asked them not to make it public.
They told me that's not public. Last week, it was the directors of the seamen's home. And the past months, the Firemen's Charitable Association, the Ladies' Benevolent Society, and St. Anna's Asylum for the Relief of Destitute Females. Mr. Touro, you are being very inconsiderate.
I do the best I can.
You make it hard for the rest of us. That is to say, for men of standing and property.
Do I?
Of course. These people expect me to give to every cause to which you contribute, and at least as much money.
Or perhaps more, Mr. McDonough, since I am only, as you say, the second richest man in New Orleans.
Charity begins at home, sir. You have no family. I work to support my wife and children.
They would be destitute otherwise.
Nonsense. If I were to die tomorrow, they would be ample. You are changing the subject. Mr. Touro, there are other ways of spending money. Your house, for example, it's too small, for one thing.
I am comfortable in it.
Your clothes do not befit a man of means. Your lack of servants...
Mr. McDonough, I do not count your money nor tell you how to spend it. In short, I mind my own business.
This is my business.
No. Unless...
Unless what, Mr. Touro?
Unless you wish to follow my example, in which case I shall be happy to instruct you.
But there were precious few who followed Judah Touro's example. He was the first in his store every morning and the last to leave it at night. Yet he always found time to listen and to help, whether it was the chairman of a board of trustees or a man without shoes. And therefore he was, I think, after all, a remarkable man. But there was one time when Judah Touro was not able to give what was in his heart to give. You will not find it written as I will tell it, but it began on a day when he went to meet one of his ships just docked and spoke to the captain.
You made good time, Captain.
Aye, we had fair winds all the way, sir.
The cargo?
No damage, Mr. Touro. It's being unloaded now.
Good. There'll be a bonus, Captain.
I thank you kindly, sir.
Not at all. You've earned it. And be...
Who is this, Captain?
Kind of bonus for you, Mr. Touro.
I do not consider this a joking matter.
Aye, sir. He's a runaway slave. They caught him in Baltimore just as we were making ready to sail. The owner ordered him shipped back here. What I meant by a bonus for you, sir, I got a passenger rate for it.
Listen to me, Captain. And listen closely. Under no circumstances are you ever to take us... Are you ever to take such cargo again?
What? Mr. Touro?
Under no circumstances whatsoever. Take his chains off, Captain.
Oh, I can't do that, sir. He's a runaway slave.
He's half starved. Did your master treat you badly? You don't have to be afraid to talk.
Ah, Captain, you brought back that good-for-nothing houseboy of mine.
What are you going to do to him, Mr. McDonough?
No, what do you expect, Mr. Touro? I'll teach him not to run away again.
I asked you a question. What are you going to do to him?
Mr. Touro, didn't you say you were not interested in how I disposed of my property?
I'm talking about a human being.
Oh, Jim? I paid for him. He's my property. Captain, I would appreciate it greatly if you sent one of your men along with me, just in case.
How much do you want for him, Mr. McDonough?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Touro.
I want to buy Jim from you.
Oh, no. You don't want a no-account rascal like him. Now, I have one or two men I can spare, full-grown, strong, not scrawny like this one.
How much, Mr. McDonough?
Well, I paid $125 for him some years ago, and what with newspaper notices when he ran away, his passage back...
Don't drag it out.
$200. Don't say I didn't warn you.
You'll have your money this afternoon. The chains, Captain.
I have the key.
If this is the way you do business, Mr. Touro, you won't last long.
Come on, Jim. Let's go home. Is this the first time you've run away, Jim? What were you going to do? Where were you heading for? The kitchen is through there. Get yourself something to eat. Did they give you anything to eat on board ship?
Just bread and water.
You must be very hungry.
I've been hungry before.
When you want it, there's food in the kitchen. Jim, why won't you talk to me?
You're the master. You tell me what to do. I work.
Didn't you know they'd send you back? Even if you got to New York or Boston?
I heard of a place up north, a place called Canada.
More than 2,000 miles of running and hiding. He must have wanted to get away very badly.
Mr. McDonough, he not a hard master.
Still, you ran away.
He'd a master.
And you'll run away again, won't you? Won't you, Jim?
I ain't aiming to be nobody's slave no more.
No. Jim, will you hand me the pen and ink there, please? And a sheet of paper. Thank you. I, Judah Turo, having duly purchased, being the lawful owner, do hereby. There. Take it, Jim.
You want me to deliver the paper to somebody?
No, it's for you.
For me?
Don't lose it. If anybody asks you, you show it to him.
What for? What'd it say?
It says you're a free man. Jim?
You mean I can walk out of here? Right now?
Right now. If you want to.
I ain't nobody's slave no more. I'm a free man.
Jim! Jim!
Yes, sir, Mr. Turo.
What are you doing here? That paper I gave you yesterday.
Right here in my pocket. I was just chopping some firewood for the stove.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, sir, but won't take but a minute. Oh, you mean you're trying to read with all that noise?
No, I said what I mean. You don't have to chop wood for me or do anything for me. You understand, Jim?
No, sir. You gave me a paper yesterday.
That's right.
Paper say I'm a free man.
And you are.
Wood needs chopping. I'm a free man. Why can't I chop it?
All right, chop the wood. Only I'll pay you for it.
No, sir, Mr. Turo. You done already paid.
No, I can't have anyone work for me unless I pay him.
But I... You pay me, Mr. Turo.
That's sensible. You'll get regular wages every Friday. All right, what are you waiting for, Jim? No loafing when you work for wages.
You give Mr. McDonough a lot of money.
I can afford it.
Then you turn around and give me that paper.
It was my ship that brought you back. That's no answer, is it?
I don't know, sir.
Jim, this book I was reading, do you know what it is?
They're all the same to me.
It's the Bible.
The Bible? I heard the preacher talking about it.
Listen, Jim. This is what it says. Thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondsman in the land of Egypt.
Mr. Turo, someday I'm going to learn how to read that book real good. You've given me too much money, Mr. Turo.
It's your usual weekly wage, Jim.
Monday and Wednesdays, I didn't come in till afternoon.
You did your work.
Oh, if you don't mind, Mr. Turo, I can't take what ain't coming to me.
If that's how you want it.
Yes, sir. You ain't asked me where I went Monday and Wednesday morning.
You only work for me, Jim. If you want to tell me, you will.
I asked Reverend Clapp if I could stand in back of the schoolroom and just listen. You know, the little room over the church?
Yes, I know.
The little ones, they learning ABCs. Me, I just listen. Except after a while, I start saying it soft like to myself. A, B, C, D, E. I ain't learned, but only up to E.
It takes time.
But you know, well, maybe you'd laugh if I tell you.
I won't laugh, Jim.
They takes the ABCs and put them together and and make a word. And they take a lot of words and put them together, and it's a book or a newspaper. And a person could read them.
Jim?
Hmm?
Talk to me, Jim. Instead of always reading a newspaper.
How am I going to learn if I don't read, sir?
Why can't you rest at light night like a man should? Is that Mr. Turo? He put the reading in your head.
Ain't nobody making me do this. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bite your head off. All right. No more reading.
Jim, honey, tell me how it's going to be when we go away.
I told you, sir. We got to wait.
I know, but tell me again.
Well, after we get married...
By a preacher? A real marrying preacher?
Sure, a real preacher. Then we go up north. Maybe to Boston. Yep, we'll go to Boston.
Cold up there, ain't it?
Well, what if it is? I'll buy you a dress made of wool.
A blue dress made of lamb's wool. How long will it take us to get there?
I don't know. Took more than a month when they caught me in Baltimore. To Boston. Maybe 2 months, maybe more.
Say 2 months, and then what?
And then? Well, I'm pretty handy making things. Maybe I'll set me up a carpenter shop. I'll work, and you keep house. And on a fine evening, we'll walk in the street, look at everybody. And there won't be nobody to tell us what we can do and what not to do.
It's so good the way you tell it. Jim, honey, don't be cross if I say something.
It ain't no use, sir. You know what I'll say.
Why can't we go right away tomorrow?
Because we can't, that's why.
That's not a reason. You've got to tell me a reason.
I ain't ready to go. It's all the reason I can tell you.
I'm free like you. Ain't nothing to keep us here in New Orleans.
Listen to me, Sarah. I got a paper that says I'm free. Sarah, I ain't free to go. Not yet. Yes, sir, Mr. McDonough.
Come along with me, Jim. Well, come on.
I'm sorry, Mr. McDonough, sir. I'm working for Mr. Turo now.
I know that, but I want you to do some work for me. My roof needs shingling. I'll pay Mr. Turo for your time.
I don't mean no disrespect, sir, only if I work for you, you got to pay me, not Mr. Turo.
What? Well, I suppose you're right. Well, then I'll pay you.
I can come day after tomorrow.
Out of the question, I want you today.
I can't, Mr. McDonough. I got to finish the woodshed for Mr. Turo.
The woodshed can wait. My roof is leaking.
I can come day after tomorrow.
I'll speak to Turo about this.
It won't make no difference, sir.
Be careful, Jim. You wouldn't want me to think you're being insolent.
No, sir. Only it ain't right to leave any work in the middle without finishing.
You've changed, Jim.
I work for wages now, Mr. McDonough.
All right. Come day after tomorrow. You do a good job, I have a pair of shoes for you, good as new. You can pick the fattest hen at my chicken coop.
Mr. McDonough, sir, you pay me regular wages.
You're mighty independent, aren't you?
Not yet, sir, but I aim to be.
Jim, I never thought much of you when you belonged to me. I think I like you even less now.
Yes, sir. You don't have to like me, sir. You just have to pay me regular wages. Cash money.
Jim worked for anyone who would pay him regular wages in cash money. I used to see him often around Judah Turo's house, where there was always work for him, and I used to wonder why he worked so much harder than he had need to and what he was doing with the money he earned. But I could never talk about it with my friend.
A man is entitled to his private thoughts, Shepard, to his private motives. If you take that away, you make a slave of him.
For a man who spent so much of his wealth and so much of his time in public giving, Judah Turo was jealous of his privacy, and he respected the privacy of others.
If Jim is working hard, he has his reasons. And if he wants to tell me, he will.
Mr. Turo, this is Sarah.
I heard a lot about you, Mr. Turo.
We gonna get married.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, Jim. I must think of a special wedding present.
Please, sir. It ain't why we came here.
Of course not.
We've been talking a long time about getting married. But Jim, he always say, when I'm ready, we go to Mr. Turo. Then we get married. That's all he say. He don't tell me why.
If there's anything I can do, Jim.
There ain't nothing you can do, Mr. Turo. I brought you something belong to you. You paid Mr. McDonough $200. I'm giving it back.
That's not mine, Jim.
You give me a paper. Seems like a long time ago. Says I'm free.
Yes, and there were no strings attached.
A paper can't make me free. Can't make me feel free. Mr. Turo, I've been reading a little. I've been reading the Bible. Bible says I'm free. But Mr. McDonough, he used to own me like I was a horse or a pig.
Not anymore, Jim.
Ain't no chains on me no more.
Then why don't you keep the $200?
You're a good man. I don't want to say nothing to hurt your feelings, Mr. Turo. You trying to do something you just can't do. If you got the right to set me free, Mr. McDonough got the right to buy me and own me.
Give me the money, Jim.
I thank you, Mr. Turo. I guess I'm ready now, Sarah.
Jim's going to be my husband, Mr. Turo. But I don't know if I understand him. But I thank you, too. And goodbye.
Sarah, there's something I ain't told you. Maybe I didn't know it myself till just now. Sarah, we ain't going away.
But you promised, Jim.
I know. That was before. Sarah, it don't make no difference where you are. Boston or New Orleans. It don't make no difference so long as you're free. Just so long as you make yourself free.
Shepard, we've been friends a long time. Tell me what to do.
With the $200? Why, you know what you'll do, my friend. You'll give it away to someone who needs it.
I suppose so. It's easy to do that.
Hmm? Most people don't find it so easy.
If the orphanage roof leaks, if a synagogue needs a new Torah, I'm happy to give the money. But Shepard, in Jim's case, I tried to do something I just couldn't do.
Well, you have no cause to blame yourself, Judah. You did Jim no injury.
Maybe not. Only, how easily a man forgets the limitations of being human.
This was my friend, Judah Turo, who gave so generously all his life to the Turo Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, the Turo Synagogue and the Turo Infirmary in New Orleans, the libraries and the parks, the Jewish congregations, and the Christian churches that received his gifts. His monument is not one, but many. If I've said that he was in no way remarkable, you must not believe me. For Judah Turo took back a gift he gave and understood that some things cannot be given, but must be won by each man for himself.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Lawrence A. Ween, president of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York. Mr. Ween.
Judah Turow learned that one human being cannot give another his freedom, that it is not his to give, but he can help him to be free. This simple truth speaks to us eloquently today. We can help men to be free. Long ago, the great philosopher Moses Maimonides put it this way. He said in the Golden Steps of Tzedakah that the highest order of charity is to help men to help themselves. Men are not bound only by chains. They can be enslaved by illness and anxiety, by poverty, despair, and ignorance. These are the things that the philanthropic institutions of our country fight day after day. These are the things that we in the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York fight in every one of the 116 hospitals and social service agencies we maintain. And though the problems we face may be larger in quantity, they are not greater in kind. Every community in this nation is and must be deeply concerned. The miracles of modern medicine, for instance, have enabled all of us to live longer. How do we make life worth living for our growing numbers of aged? Throughout the United States, there is an increase in delinquency and in emotional disturbance in our children, a rising incidence of family trouble and distress. How do we remove the pressures and tensions that bind them as surely as the chains that bound Jim? Help, health and welfare help, must be as varied as are the needs of people. It is in the way they provide this help that the voluntary philanthropic institutions of our nation are involved with removing the barriers to any human being's development. These great institutions, serving tens of millions of people of all races and faiths, are trying in every way they can to live up to Maimonides' injunction, to help people to help themselves. Only in this way can any one of us hope to free men. Spiritually, emotionally, physically. Only in this way can we really hope to remove the chains that hold man back from realizing his fullest potential.
Thank you, Mr. Ween. Our eternal light drama today, The Gift, was written by Joseph Mendel and is third in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding eternal light programs. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were William Redfield, Roger DeCoven, John McGovern, Elwood Smith, and Roxy Roker. Mendel Kramer played Judah Turow. Be with us next week for The Maccabees by Morton Wishengrad, presented in observance of Hanukkah. This is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.